Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labor MP.
Good morning, I'm Phil Goff, Labor MP for Mount Roskill and hosting the show today. Welcome to Red Alert Radio on Planet FM 104.6. And my guest this morning will be the Honourable David Parker, Labor MP, now based in Auckland but with very strong connections in Otago. David's got the second biggest job, I think, in opposition after the Leader of the Opposition. He's Labor's finance spokesman. His background is as a lawyer and a businessman, and he has been a minister in the former Labor government. He's been making waves in Parliament recently, challenging what I think is the absence of a National Party plan to get the New Zealand economy back on its feet, to get growth, to get jobs, and putting up Labor alternatives. So our topic today, well, obviously, I guess, is finance and economics. Now, we're a great country in New Zealand. I'm proud to live here. And New Zealanders, you know, like living in this country, but things aren't going well when you look at the level of unemployment, when you look at the level of migration out of New Zealand, and particularly across the Tasman. And I've been spending some time recently talking to people in Australia. They don't actually want to be there. They'd rather be at home. When they're at Stadium Australia, they're still supporting the All Blacks. But they tell me, and they tell me consistently, there's lack of opportunity in New Zealand, there's lack of jobs, and when you've got a job, the income is about 25% lower than what they're getting in Australia. So let's look at how we can bring those people back, how we can make New Zealand the country that we've got the potential to be, and let's look at the problems that we urgently need to address. Well, I guess I'll start with unemployment. You've got the statistics, 6.8%, 162,000 Kiwis out of work. But the human reality of that is pretty appalling. Unemployment is wasteful of human skills, and it's damaging to the people who want to work but can't find the jobs. Now, just 4 years ago, we used to have one of the lowest levels of unemployment in the developed world. We've slipped. Why is that? There's a second question, and that is, it's not that there are no jobs available, but we've got a mismatch between the skills that New Zealanders who are out of work possess and the skills that we desperately need. So what is the government doing? Well, I asked the question a few years ago when we had the earthquakes in Christchurch. Prime Minister, what are you doing? Because we've got a big job ahead of us to rebuild Christchurch. He said, oh, we'll import skilled labour, from Ireland, from China, from wherever we can find it. But is that really sensible when New Zealanders are out of work? Probably around 80,000 young New Zealanders, not in employment, education, or skill training. And what are we doing? We're not providing them with the skills, but we're importing the labour to do that job. And are we really training people in the right areas? I was watching a young lady on television the other day, just completing a PhD at the university. And she said, well, when I'm finished, of course, there's no jobs here for me with my specialist skills. I'm off to Australia. And I thought, great for Australia, really trained at our expense, highly skilled, highly motivated labour force. But why are we training people for jobs that don't exist in this country when we're not training them for jobs that do exist? That's a big question as well. Now, I've been talking a bit about Australia. 53,000 New Zealanders left our homeland for Australia last year, and around 200,000 since National got into government. How do we stop that skill drain? How do we stop that brain drain? Now, every week, we're also hearing about loss of jobs, particularly in manufacturing, but more recently also in mining and in export industries generally. I think we've got, and David will correct me in a moment if I'm wrong, 57,000 jobs less than we had in 2008. And what we're told constantly by people who are trying to export is that a key problem is the value of the New Zealand currency. Why is the dollar so high? Why is it overvalued? Why, when we're importing more than we're exporting, why aren't we doing something about this to encourage exports and to encourage import substitution? Now, we've heard some answers from other political parties. The Greens want to print money. Well, I don't think it's quite as easy as that. If it was that easy, we would have been doing it long ago. Actually, you run the risk doing that in the wrong way in undermining confidence in your economy and making things worse. So what we need actually is growth. Where does that growth come from? How do we get it? How do we get the high value added industries that can produce good wages and make us a more desirable country in which to live? And how do we get sustainable growth and growth that fits our branding as being a clean, green country, the basis on which we sell our food and our beverage, and we encourage people to come as tourists to this country? Well, those are some of the questions, and to help answer them, I want to welcome onto the program today David Parker, MP, Labor Spokesman on Finance. David, welcome on the program.
Thank you, Phil.
Well, let's start with growth and jobs. That seems to be the critical thing. And maybe if I begin with the broader question, what is National's plan? Is there a plan? If there is a plan, why isn't it working? And what are some of the Labor alternatives to producing growth so that we can get jobs?
Well, you know, the National Party came to power 4 years ago promising that they were going to stem the tide of New Zealanders going over to Australia. Since then, they've left in record numbers, 170,000 to 180,000, let's say 175,000 since Labor took office. Now, that
since Labor left office.
Since Labor left office and National took over, yeah. Now, that, it's easy to say that number pretty quickly, but when you think about it, that's more than the population of Hamilton.
And Hamilton's what, our third, fourth largest city? Fourth largest city.
And if you want a South Island comparison, it's more than the population, the whole of the population of Dunedin and Invercargill combined. It's a huge number of people who found that the New Zealand economy isn't working for them and that they've had to leave. The saddest thing for me in that is that 40% of them are between the age of 18 and 30. So when you're 20-somethings, the people that we've educated and they're just coming into the workforce, going to be productive, good members of society, they're motivated, they get up and go, but they get up and go to Australia rather than going to work in New Zealand.
That's huge.
It is huge. It is huge. And you've got to ask yourself, well, what's driving that? Well, what's driving that is a lack of opportunity in New Zealand. This government's focusing on the wrong areas. What is their plan? Well, actually, you go back the last 3 years and you say, what have they done significantly to change the New Zealand economy and make it better? Well, their last three-year term, they were going to push mining, including mining in national parks. New Zealanders knew that was, one, never going to make them wealthy, and they also didn't like the thought of bulldozers in the national parks. And so the National Party, in the face of protest, backed off that, and they were left with a very slim economic plan for last term. They didn't start training people for Christchurch, which is an issue that you raise, which is going to be the biggest source of jobs in New Zealand for the next few years, but we don't have the people who have been trained to do the work. And then this year, this three-tier term, I think their plan's been even nuttier. They've said that their big plan for the economy is to sell off our state-owned power companies. And we all know that selling off what already exists won't improve our economy or create even one more job, which is change who owns those power companies and put up power prices.
That's the politics of desperation. You're quite right. I mean, when you've run out of all other alternatives, you start flogging off your assets. So, you know, if you look at it from a household perspective and you've been spending a bit too much you're in trouble, what do you start doing? You start flogging off your assets. But worse than that, of course, you're flogging off the assets that are very valuable assets that are making a big return, giving New Zealanders, you know, $200 or $300 million a year in dividends, which we risk losing. So they don't have the answer. What sort of things should they be doing?
On that front, Phil, as you've pointed out, the government deficit gets worse through selling those power companies because the money they get from them is, and the interest they save, because they don't have quite as much debt because they've paid a bit off, the money they save is less then the profits they forego.
Yeah,
but the deficit gets worse.
We're worse off by a net, I think, $100 million a year. Even Treasury admits that. So
that's right.
Why do something that loses you money rather than makes you money is again either a triumph of ideology over common sense or simply the politics or the economics of stupidity.
Yeah, and maybe it's, you know, they really don't have much of an interest in national and being fair to people overall in the economy. They seem to want to advantage the interests of the people who've already got the most. Now, you know, it's all very well for us in opposition to sit there and say, well, you know, it's obviously going wrong on national. It's fair for people to ask the question as to what we would do differently to make things better. Well, you know, there's some pretty obvious examples of that. The first one is in respect of training. You know, it is a tragedy that we haven't trained New Zealanders to do the work that's needed to be done in Canterbury. Instead, we're going to be importing up to 30,000 people on work permits to do the work. They're no doubt good people. Those are jobs that should be being available to New Zealanders who've been trained in advance of it. So that was one really practical thing. And one of the policies you brought forward, Phil, was to help that. You were going to say, well, let's use the dole payment to encourage someone to take on an interest.
Yeah, and we've had plenty of time to do that. I mean, it's now 2 years since the first earthquake, isn't it? September 2010. And yet, you know, what we've had is a fall in jobs in Christchurch, a rise in unemployment, and pretty soon, when we're ready to rebuild, there'll be a huge shortage of labour. That'll force the price of, you know, people buying replacement homes up. It'll be inflationary. New Zealanders will still be sitting on the dole while people with the skills are being imported to do it. Now, none of that makes sense.
The dole
for the apprenticeship is a good idea. What are the broader things? I mean, you've been talking quite a lot about monetary policy. We've got this difficulty. We've seen every week we seem to see manufacturing industries closing down, not because they're hugely inefficient, but simply because if the New Zealand dollar is really strong, it's now, you know, 81, 82, fluctuating around there. You know, it wasn't so long ago that it was 40 cents American. That makes it twice as hard for our manufacturers to sell their goods into markets where based on the American currency. So what do we do about monetary policy? How do we stop the dollar being overvalued the way that it is?
Yeah, well, look, you know, sometimes I think that when people, particularly politicians, talk about the economy, it's not going well, they try and overcomplicate it. The reality is that our economy is but a collection of us. You know, it's you, it's me, it's our families, it's New Zealanders. And it's the combination of New Zealanders and the businesses that we own and the government that we collectively own that is our economy. Now, when you and I don't earn enough in a year to cover our costs, so we don't have enough to pay our bills and pay the interest or the rent on the mortgage, then by the end of the year, we're worse off. We've either had to borrow money to plug that gap, or we've had to sell something that we owned at the start of the year. And a country's no different. If a country doesn't export enough to cover the cost of its interest and its import bill, then it has to borrow overseas or sell something that was previously New Zealand owned to an overseas owner. And that's one of New Zealand's biggest problems, because we've been doing that for a long time now. And the sad thing is, at the moment, we're the worst at that in the world, bar Greece. When you don't cover the cost of your imports and interest, you have what we call an external or current account deficit. New Zealand's current account deficit is the second worst in the world this year, according to the International Monetary Fund, the second worst in the developed world after Greece, and next year it gets worse, and we are the worst in the world. And the year after, we're the worst in the world. And the year after that, we're the worst in the world.
Jeez.
Now, it just can't keep going. This is a serious problem. And yet businesses can't fix all these problems by themselves. They need the government to change some of the things that only governments can do in order for businesses to be able to sell to the world, employ New Zealanders, and for us to get wealthier as a nation rather than poorer.
Yeah, those figures are quite staggering. You know, we have had a current account deficit for a long time, but it is getting worse. It's not getting better, which indicates that we haven't put in place the measures that we need to address that. So what are the options? Now, you've just come back from a trip overseas. I think you've met some of the top world economists. In the US, you met with Joseph Stiglitz, who's a Nobel Prize winner. You met with Olivier Blanchard, who's chief economist for the World Bank, I think, if I recall rightly.
The IMF, yeah.
Oh, IMF. Yep. What sort of solutions are they looking at? What sort of advice did they give you about the alternative options that New Zealand could be pursuing?
Well, overseas, of course, everyone understands that the world's changed following the global financial crisis and that we just can't carry on as we did before the global financial crisis. And they say, instead of focusing only on inflation, giving inflation primacy ahead of other important matters in the economy, we've got to have a look at our exchange rate too. Now, for me, that makes common sense. You know, what governments are trying to do for business and what business needs them to do is to create the economic conditions that enable them to employ people. In order for them to be able to do, they've got to be able to sell what they produce. In order for them to be able to invest in the machines to do that efficiently and to be able to employ people on good wages, they have to know that the conditions next year are going to be pretty stable. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a period in history when inflation was so high that things weren't stable because prices were going all over the place. Now the problem is not the exchange rate, not the inflation rate, but the exchange rate, which is going all over the place. And so employers in the manufacturing area say, hey, look, we're having to lay off staff. We can't compete on the world stage because everyone else is devaluing their currency so that they can compete in export markets. And New Zealand just sitting there like dummies, doing nothing, becoming less competitive year by year and therefore losing jobs. So the IMF, Stiglitz, who's, as you say, is a Nobel Prize winner in economics, they say governments must pay attention to the exchange rate by changing monetary policy.
Yeah, so what we're looking at doing at the moment under law, statute law, there are certain guidelines given to the Reserve Bank as to what policies they should be following. They're independent, but we've told them that inflation is the objective. And the first thing you'd do is to broaden out those objectives so that while you retain the independence of the Reserve Bank, which is important, you don't want politicians interfering with that all the time, but to give them the broader guideline that, hey, 21st century New Zealand is different from the 1970s and 80s, we want you to look at how the exchange rate impacts on things like jobs and growth so that while they're still independent, they have a range of different objectives that they have to balance out. And what about different tools? What do the Reserve Bank need to have other tools by which they can influence the exchange rate, or do they already have that?
They do. The most important thing in respect of monetary policy, though, is to change the act so that the Reserve Bank has said, hey, look, inflation's important, but it's not the only thing that you need to take care of. You have to keep an eye on the exchange rate. So instead of subjugating exchange rate to inflation, you've got to have a look at both. Now, what tools do they need to do that? Well, they've actually already got a fairly big toolbox, and they would use those tools differently, even if the objectives were changed, without any additional tool being given to them to help. They do say, though, that in addition to the current tools they've got, they need the government to change the tax system in a way that favours growth rather than speculation, because currently our tax system favours the wealthiest people in New Zealand effectively avoiding tax legally by investing in too much in land and an extra industrial building or an extra, you know, if they're wealthy, 10 houses, in a way that doesn't attract tax often. And that the effect of that is that because there's a tax bias in favour of speculation, there's not enough money invested in factories and buildings. Mm-hmm. Factories and the plant that are needed for, you know, people to produce stuff to sell overseas. So a capital gains tax is pro-growth, and we're calling it pro-growth tax reform. It's interesting that term's starting to take hold because people see that changes to the tax system can encourage growth and the jobs we need in the New Zealand economy and the exports we need to pay our way in the world.
Right. So if we bring it down to, you know, in simple terms, at the moment, you know, if one of my sons or my daughter came to me and said, Dad, what should I invest in? I'd probably, if I was being honest, say, well, buy property because land prices go up, and when you sell that property, you don't pay tax on it. And that's a logical direction for New Zealanders to do, but it doesn't actually help us grow. It doesn't increase productivity. It just causes, if anything, it causes inflation because you're pushing the price of those existing commodities up. What we need to have is a taxation system that is more balanced and encourages investment in the productive areas, not the speculative. And that's basically what you're saying.
Exactly. And it's not just the Labor Party saying that. Now, we're not going to tax people's first home, the home they live in. You know, it's good that people own their own home. In fact, we've got a problem because not enough people can buy their own home now. And because of this tax bias, a few people are owning more and more houses, and there's lots of people don't even own one now. It's wrong. But you're right. And it's not just Labor that's saying that. The International Monetary Fund, the OECD, another advisor internationally to governments, they're saying we need it. The New Zealand Treasury says we need to fix up these problems in our tax system, and so does the Reserve Bank, because it means that you don't have to push up interest rates as high because you don't have as much of a problem with asset price inflation, house prices going through the roof. So changing the tax system that way, introducing a research and development tax credit to invest, encourage these businesses, give them a bit of a break if they invest in some plant that's going to employ someone. It's a fantastic thing for the economy.
Yeah.
So they should be getting an incentive to do that rather than suffering this bias they currently suffer, which is against the productive sector. We also need more capital, Phil. You know, I hear National say, Australia's having a mining boom. Well, that's true. New Zealand has just had a dairy boom. We've had the best terms of trade in more than a generation, and we still haven't once covered the cost of our imports and interest from our exports. Australia is wealthier, not just because of their mining boom. They save better than we do. You know, the old national government, the old Labor government under Norman Kirk introduced the savings scheme in New Zealand, but National under Mr. Muldoon ditched. Not long after that, the Australians did something similar, and they had universal work-based savings. Labor in the last government introduced KiwiSaver, but it doesn't go far enough because not everyone's covered by it. So we actually need to expand KiwiSaver. Everyone needs a nest egg when they retire. They need the government helping them to do this through their workplace. If we did that, we'd also have more money to invest in our businesses. That money would go into our factories, into these sophisticated services and products that earn money overseas, and we'd get wealthier as a country again.
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, if we're not prepared or able to save in New Zealand, and we have to borrow the savings of people working overseas, then more and more money is going to flow out overseas to the people who have made the investments in New Zealand. So we can't just simply say it's all those foreigners' fault. The fact is we're not saving enough, and that's partly because our incomes are low.
Yeah.
We have to address that. But it's also partly because until we brought in KiwiSaver, there actually wasn't the mechanism for a lot of people to be incentivized and to be encouraged into saving. So
Little bit every week adds up.
Yeah.
You know, it's already working, but we need to go further. So those are three, I think, big ideas that only a government can cause to happen. Improved savings, a better tax system which encourages growth rather than speculation, therefore more jobs, and changes to our export settings through a bit more competitive exchange rate. The government refuses to touch any one of them.
What do you think that is, David? I mean, these things are, you know, they're not just being advocated by the Labor Party. They're being advocated, as you said, by Treasury, by the Reserve Bank, by the International Monetary Fund. Countries overseas that are successful are following those policies. Why is it that National doesn't say we need to have a tax system that encourages growth, we need to have a strengthened system for savings, we need to have a competitive exchange rate? I mean, what are they saying should happen?
Conservative parties are always very conservative, and National's a conservative party. There are two sorts of parties in democracies around the world. There's conservative parties like National, progressive parties like Labor. Conservative parties always, they cut it, government expenditure a bit, and there's, you know, it's appropriate to do that. We're not saying that's always wrong. That's something that they do. They sometimes change labour relations laws in order to try and drive down wages, because their view is that, you know, lower wages make businesses more competitive. Then the National government's doing that again this time. Other than that, conservative governments do very little to change the shape of an economy, and the reason for that is that their power base is attached to current distribution of wealth and assets, and they don't want that to change. They don't want the relative value of different assets and who owns them to change in a way that's fairer, because they're very happy with the status quo.
So it's government for the few and for the already wealthy, rather than the government for what is good for the long-term benefit of New Zealand, including taking decisions, I guess, that require a bit of political courage. And, what we're advocating there, there will be people that are opposed to that because they've got vested interests in the current system. But, hey, I want to move on to one other thing while we've got time. When I look at countries like, you know, Singapore and Taiwan, they're not much bigger than us. Singapore's about the same size. Taiwan's probably a couple of times bigger than us. But what they've done is they've really thrived. They've been the fastest growing economies. And partly that's because, not because of resources, they're not resource rich, but they have put money into being innovative, into being creative. They've invested in research and development. Now, you know, Labor has a plan, doesn't it, to encourage investment in research and development so that we have a smart economy, a high-tech economy that pays high incomes. Tell us a bit about the sort of things that we might do in that area.
Well, we've got to copy those countries that are doing better than us. We've got to invest in more research and development, take advantages of some of the incredible advantages that New Zealand has. Isn't it amazing that countries like Singapore have become wealthier than New Zealand, despite the fact that they've got no resource base? How have they done it? They've saved. They've got a decent tax system. They pay attention to their exchange rate. And as you say, they put enough money into innovation to bring forward these new products, to unleash the potential of their people to be innovative, to encourage them by giving them a tax break if they do. Those sorts of things would drive New Zealand to higher value products. Some of them would be in the clean energy area. You know, we should be immensely proud of the fact that our electricity, even now, is lower in cost than a lot of countries around the world because we're so good at renewables. We harness the wind, the water through our hydro stations, our geothermal stations. They produce electricity cheaper than people who are reliant on oil, for example, to generate electricity. Because we've been doing that for so long, we're incredibly good at building wind farms, at servicing them. We're good at designing the engineering around geothermal. We should be encouraging New Zealand companies to take advantage of that expertise, to sell a few bits of kit that are used to build a geothermal station, etc. If we do that, we'll get wealthier.
Yeah, when you look at it, although the New Zealand situation looks pretty bleak at the moment, you see a lot of advantages that we do have in our environment, in the ability of our land to produce high-quality goods in a renewable, a sustainable manner. What we're lacking is really the courage to make some of the changes that other countries have made. The examples are there, but we're not doing it. And I guess I look at it and I listen to Jerry Brownlee, and it's he's got mining on his mind. You know, that's how Australia got rich. That's how we can get rich. Kind of ironic that I suppose that we're laying off hundreds of people in the mining industry.
And in manufacturing. Let's talk about that for a minute. You know, outside of primary processing, and primary processing manufacturing always holds up even when prices go down, because your cows still produce a litre of milk or as many litres of milk, and you've got just as many livestock to be processed. And that manufacturing stays pretty stable. But the rest of your manufacturing sector withers, and that's what's happening in New Zealand at the moment. These manufacturing jobs that we used to have, from the aluminium smelter in Southland to the wood processing up north and to any other number of manufacturers, they're losing jobs and sales because of our current economic settings, and that's not good for New Zealand.
No, that's bad. Well, look, we're starting to run out of time, David. I want to thank you very much for coming on the program and just, you know, recapping some of the things that you've talked about. We need a tax law that encourages growth. We need savings so that Kiwis are investing in their own future. We need to look at the human resource, upskilling, better education system, not increasing class sizes, skill training, dole for the apprenticeship. We need to look at research and development for a smart economy. Those things come together and they produce a future that that can put New Zealand back on top of the world. But what we haven't got at the moment is the drive and determination to do it. That's about all I've got time for today, David. But hey,
sounds like a plan.
It sounds like a plan, and that's what we'll be putting up at the next election, and we'll be comparing it to really the lack of any action that's been taken over the last 6 years. Asset sales is not a plan. Cutting wages is not a plan. Importing skills when we should be giving skills to New Zealanders isn't a plan. It seems to me there's a very clear alternative at the next election. Thanks very much, David, for your time today. Thanks for the work that you're doing. Take care. Cheers. And this is Phil Goff saying thank you for listening today to Red Alert Radio on Planet FM 104.6. We'll catch you again. Thank you very much.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/Red Alert Radio.